We were talking about covenants this morning, and we were talking about the seriousness of it. I wanted to make one more point about this, how serious covenants are. Covenants, when they were broken, oftentimes invoked a death penalty. And in one other place I want to look at is in Ezekiel chapter 17. In Ezekiel 17, starting with verse 12. Ezekiel 17, starting with verse 12. It says, "Now say to the rebellious house, do you not know that these things mean? Behold, the king of Babylon came to Jerusalem, took his king and princes, and brought them to him in Babylon. He took one of the royal family and made a covenant with him, putting him under oath. He also took away the mighty of the land, that the kingdom might be in subjection, not exalting itself, but keeping his covenant, that it might continue. But he rebelled against him by sending his envoys to Egypt, that they might give him horses and many troops. Will he succeed? Will he who does not such things escape? Can he indeed break the covenant and escape? As I live, declares the Lord God, surely in the country of the king who put him in on the throne, whose oath he despised and whose covenant he broke, in Babylon he shall die." I want you to take note of that particularly. It continues on, going down to verse 21, but take note particularly of that. God himself, even though this was a covenant that was made by an Israelite king to an invading king, who had basically, in a sense, forced him into a covenant, God still expected that covenant to be upheld. Because it was made before him, and therefore, basically, by invoking that covenant, God's name's on the line. And so God is saying, if you make a covenant in my name with this king, you're expected still to uphold it. And since he did not, basically, he said, I'm going to send you off to that king, and you're going to die in that country, which is what actually happened. These are covenants between men, but God enforced the punishments when they were broken. Now, it doesn't mean that covenants couldn't be changed. There were times when covenants were altered. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 8, starting with verse 13, it says, "When he set a new covenant, he made the first obsolete. But whatever has become obsolete is growing old and ready to disappear." One is under a covenant. And if there's a change made in that covenant, then the first one is set aside. And only the terms by the new covenant is what it binds the two parties. And we'll keep that in mind as well as when we go through further details about it. But like what I'd like to focus on tonight is the various types of covenants that you see between people. There were covenants that were made between friends. Jonathan and David are probably the best example of a covenant that was made between two people who really cared about each other. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, and starting with verse 1, "Now it came about, when he had finished speaking to Saul, that the son of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his spear, his bow, and his belt." Here was a way that they were able to make a covenant. The reason for it was their great love for each other. But here's something we see in covenants, the giving of something to show that that covenant is enforced. This is common with covenants. We'll talk about it more a little bit later. But giving something is a way to symbolize the covenant that's in effect. That covenant was reaffirmed and expanded, not with just David, but it's also then applied to David's household. If you go over to 1 Samuel chapter 20, 1 Samuel 20 and verse 16. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies. Jonathan made David a vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. Again, we find that between the two, it was expanded. Jonathan didn't want just a vow between him and David. It was between Jonathan's household, as we go on, and David's household. In other words, between the two families, they're going to join them together because they loved each other. Now, notice also another aspect of covenants is mentioned here. It was made in the presence of God. This is not just a, hey, I promise to be there next Tuesday. That's not what a covenant is. This is a solemn vow that's made before God, in the presence of God, acknowledging that God is part of the witnesses to that covenant. Now, later on, when David and Jonathan are separated, we have more detail about that covenant revealed. Because up until this time, we really don't know what the details as far as exactly what they were promising each other as part of the covenant. But in chapter 20 and verse 41, it says, and when the lad had gone, David arose from the south side and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. They kissed each other and wept together, but David wept more. Jonathan said to David, go in safety, inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord will be between me and you, and between my descendants and your descendants forever. And then he rose and departed while Jonathan went into the city. They basically made a covenant that mutually said that my descendants and your descendants would take care of each other. They would treat each other like family. And that was the involved in it. Notice again, the oath was in God's name, who would oversee an enforcement, and involved not just Jonathan and David, but they were also binding their two families together by their covenant in perpetuity. Now later, when another covenant was broken, we talked about this morning, and the deaths of seven of Saul's descendants was demanded, Jonathan's son Mephibosheth was purposely skipped because of this covenant. They demanded seven of Saul's sons, and David ruled out Mephibosheth as being one of those. Take a look at 2 Samuel chapter 21. Second Samuel 21 and verse 7. The king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because of the oath of the Lord, which was between them, between David and Saul's son, Jonathan. So there's a covenant. It was respected. David kept it enforced. Even though Jonathan by this time had been dead, it didn't matter because it was between the two families. And David was bound to honor it. There are also other types of covenants. You find national covenants where all the nation chose to go underneath a vow. In this case, there were several of them recorded in the scriptures that were basically about, we're going to restore and start doing what God had said. We're going to bind ourselves to the law. Even though they were underneath the law, they were making a special covenant. The people were making a covenant between themselves. We are going to do this thing. So, for instance, in 2 Chronicles chapter 15, 2 Chronicles chapter 15, starting with verse 12. They entered into the covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and soul. And whoever would not seek the Lord God of Israel should be put to death, whether small or great, man or woman. Moreover, they made an oath to the Lord with a loud voice, with shouting, with trumpets, and with horns. All Judah rejoiced concerning the oath, for they had sworn with their whole heart and had sought him earnestly, and he let him find them. So the Lord gave them rest on every side. Again, there was a vow that was made to each other, given to the, at the same time, basically to the Lord and before the Lord. Now notice what, in here we see another aspect of covenants. There were stipulations made. They were to give themselves with their whole heart to God, and if they didn't do it, they vowed that they would be put to death. There was a stipulation. What would happen if this covenant is broken? And also notice it was done voluntarily. It was done fervently. These people were not forced into it. They wanted to be a part of this covenant. Now later on in 2 Chronicles, this time in chapter 23, there was a queen in Israel who had, Adaliah, who had basically usurped the throne and took over and wiped out most of David's lineage. One was actually saved. The people decided that this was enough, and they wanted to put David's lineage back on the throne. And so they also, again, bound themselves with a covenant. It says, starting with chapter 23, verse 1, it says, Now in the seventh year Jehoiada strengthened himself and took the captives of hundreds, Azariah the son of Jehoram, Ishmael the son of Jehonan, Azariah the son of Obed, Mahasa the son of Ahada, and Elishaphat the son of Zichri, and they entered into a covenant with him. They went throughout Judah and gathered the Levites from all the cities of Judah and the heads of the fathers' households of Israel, and they came to Jerusalem. Then all the assembly made a covenant with the king in the house of God. And Jehoiada said to them, Behold, the king's son shall reign. As the Lord has spoken concerning the sons of David, this thing which you have shall do, one-third of you, of the priests and the Levites, who come on in on the Sabbath, shall be keg keepers, and one-third shall be at the king's house, and one-third at the gate of the foundation. And all the people shall be in the courts of the house of the Lord. But let no one enter the house of the Lord except the priests and the ministering Levites. They may enter, for they are holy. And let all the people keep the charge of the Lord. The Levites will surround the king, each man with his weapon in his hand, and whoever enters the house, let him be killed. Thus be with the king when he comes in and when he goes out. So the Levites and all Judah did according to all that Jehoiada the priest commanded. And each one of them took his men who were to come in on the Sabbath, with those who were to go out on the Sabbath, for Jehoiada the priest did not dismiss any of the divisions. Then Jehoiada the priest gave the captains of hundreds spears and large and small shields, which had been King David's, which were in the house of God. He stationed all the people, each man with his weapons in his hand, from the right side of the house to the left side of the house, by the altar, by the house, and around the king. Then they brought out the king's son and put the crown on him, and gave him the testimony, and made him king. And Jehoiada and his sons anointed him, and said, Long live the king. When Adaliah heard the noise of the people running and praising the king, she came into the house of the Lord to the people. She looked, and behold, the king was standing by his pillar at the entrance. And the captains and the trumpeters were beside the king, and all the people of the land rejoiced and blew trumpets. The singers with their musical instruments leading the praise. Then Adaliah tore her clothes and said, Treason! Treason! Jehoiada the priest brought out the captains of hundreds who were appointed over the army and said to them, Bring her out between the ranks, and whoever follows her, put to death with the sword. For the priest said, Let her not be put to death in the house of the Lord. So they seized her, and when they arrived at the entrance of the house of the gate of the king's house, they put her to death there. Then Jehoiada made a covenant between himself and all the people and the king, that they would be the Lord's people. And all the people went to the house of Baal and tore it down, and they broke in pieces his altars and his images, and killed Mattan, the priest of Baal, before the altars. Moreover, Jehoiada placed the offices of the house of the Lord under the authority of the Levitical priest, whom David had assigned over the house of the Lord, to offer burnt offerings of the Lord, as it was written in the law of Moses, with rejoicing and singing, according to the order of David. He stationed the gatekeepers at the house of the Lord, so that no one would enter who was in any way unclean. He took the captains of hundreds and nobles and rulers of the people and all the people of the land, and brought the king down from the house of the Lord, and came through the upper gate to the king's house, and they placed the king upon the royal throne. So all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet, for they put Adonijah to death with the sword. It's a long reading, but it's an important one, because we see again aspects of covenants in here. Again, a vow was made to each other that they would, and again, at the same time, to the Lord. There were stipulations that they would protect the king and serve the Lord and do it properly instead of like they had been doing in the past. And there were punishments listed for breaking the term, basically death. And here again, people had bound themselves with a covenant. There was another one similar to that is in Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 10. Starting with verse 28. It says, now the rest of the people, the priests, the Levites, the gatekeepers, the singers, the temple servants, and all who had separated themselves from the peoples of the land to the law of God, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, all who had knowledge and understanding, are joining with their kinsmen, their nobles, and were taking on themselves a curse and an oath to walk in God's law, which was given through Moses, God's servants, to keep and to observe all the commandments of the Lord, God our Lord, and his ordinances and his statutes, and that we would not give our daughters to the peoples of the land to take their daughters for our sons. As for the peoples of the land to bring who bring wares or any grain on the Sabbath day to sell, we will not buy from them on the Sabbath or on a holy day. We will forego the crops the seventh year and the exaction of every debt. We also place ourselves under obligation to contribute yearly 1/3 of a shekel for the service of the house of our God, for the showbread and for the continual grain offering, for the continual burnt offering, the Sabbaths and the new moon, the appointed times, for the holy things, and for the sin offerings to make atonement for Israel, and all the works of the house of our God. Likewise, we cast lots for the supply of wood among the priests, the Levites, and the people, so they might bring it to the house of our God, according to our fathers' households, at a fixed time annually to burn on the altar of the Lord our God, as it is written in the law, that they might bring the first fruits of our ground, the first fruits of all the fruit of every tree, to the house of the Lord annually, and bring the house of our God, the firstborn of our sons and our cattle, and the firstborn of our herds and our flocks, as it is written in the law, for the priests who are ministering in the house of our God. We will also bring the first of our dough, our contributions, the first of every tree, the new wine, the oil, to the priests at the chambers of the house of our God, and the tithe of our ground to the Levites, for the Levites are they who receive the tithes in all rural towns. The priests, the sons of Aaron, shall be with the Levites when the Levites receive tithes, and the Levites shall bring up the tenth of the tithes to the house of our God, to the chambers of the storehouse. For the sons of Israel and the sons of Levi shall bring a contribution of grain and new wine and oil to the chambers there, and there are utensils of the sanctuary, the priests who are ministering, the gatekeepers and the singers. Thus we will not neglect the house of our God. Now it doesn't say the word covenant there, but it's basically exactly the same thing as what they've been doing before. They took a vow saying, hey, we're going to follow God's law. Now, this is not the covenant that God initially established. God already had that covenant in place. What the people were doing was basically telling each other, we're going to do this. We're going to commit ourselves to that covenant that we should have been following anyway. And notice there's a long list of obligations that they were willingly going to take on. They were going to make sure everything was done according to what the law said. And it also, again, specified what would happen if they didn't. keep that covenant. So those two types of covenants. But we also have covenants that were done to resolve problems. You could call the other ones friendly type covenants because everybody was in agreement. But sometimes covenants were made in order to solve problems that were in effect. One of the examples is Abraham and Abimelech. That's back in Genesis chapter 21. Genesis 21, starting with verse 22. Now it came about at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my offspring or with my posterity, but according to the kindness that I have shown you, you will show me and to the land which you have sojourned. Abraham said, I swear it. But Abraham complained to Abimelech because of the well of the water which the servants of Abimelech had seized. And Abimelech said, I did not know who had done this thing. You did not tell me, nor did I hear it until today. Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. Then Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock by them. Abimelech said to Abraham, what do these 7 ewe lambs mean, which you set by themselves? And he said, you shall take these 7 ewe lambs from my hand, so that it may be a witness to me that I dug this well. Therefore the place was called Beersheba, because of the two of them had took an oath. And so they made a covenant at Beersheba. And Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose and returned to the land of the Philistines. Basically, here we have a disagreement. Abimelech basically approaches Abraham, and he has a reason to fear Abraham. He says, God's protecting you, and I want to make sure that you don't decide to take me or my descendants out. Abraham approaches covenant for a different reason. He had a complaint against Abimelech because he was losing wells. He wanted water rights. So they made a binding covenant. It was bound on the descendants. If you haven't noticed, covenants are meant to last. These are not, you know, something you do next Tuesday and you're over and done with. Covenants were something that were done that made a permanent binding between two groups. And it was something that usually lasts as long as those people lasted. Again, there was a giving of gifts. There was giving of sheep and oxen in this case. 7 in particular were designated as witness to the existence of the covenant, to make sure that people understood this is what it was purpose. But notice the gifts oftentimes only came from one side. Oftentimes the one who decided that they were getting the bigger benefit from the covenant. And notice also that an oath is a part of the covenant. It talks about the giving of gifts, that they're going to make a covenant, and it also specifies as a part of it is the taking of an oath. The oath wasn't the covenant itself. It was a very important aspect of a covenant, but it was a part of it. Another example of a covenant is in Genesis 26. Again, it was with an Abimelech. A lot of people think Abimelech was a kind of like a title, like Pharaoh or king. This is not the same Abimelech that Abraham was talking to. It's too many years later. But between Isaac and another man whose name is Abimelech, another covenant, again over wells, is made. Starting with chapter 26 and verse 26, and then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with his advisor Ahuzes, and Phicol, the commander of his army. Isaac said to them, why have you come to me, since you hate me, and you sent me away from you? And they said, we plainly see the Lord has been with you. So we said, let there now be an oath between us, even between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you do not do us harm, just as we have not touched you, and have done to you nothing but good, and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Lord. Then he made them a feast, and they ate and they drank. In the morning they arose early, exchanged oath. Then Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. Now here again we have a reason for the covenant. Abimelech was worried about making an enemy out of Isaac because he sent him away, and he realized that, well, Isaac's too big and powerful, and it might come back to haunt him later. So he wanted a covenant, not just between him and Isaac, but between him and their descendants as well. Again, there was exchanging of gifts. There was terms that were given that were not to cause mutual harm. And a feast was given. That feast basically served both as a gift and proof that the animosity between the two groups was settled. Hey, we're at least kind enough to each other now that we can sit down to the same meal and eat with each other. See, that's part of what the covenant is about. It's binding two groups together, making them as friends in fellowship, saying, hey, we settled our differences, we are tied together, we're going to work together. And again, there's a mention of oaths being exchanged. Another example is in Genesis 31 between Jacob and Laban. Jacob had left suddenly. Laban was very unhappy about it. One of the things he complained about it was that some of his household gods had disappeared. He accuses of it. Jacob didn't know about the disappearance, and he's upset that he's been accused of stealing. And so they finally decided to settle their difference. And it's chapter 31, verse 36 is where we're going to start our reading. Then Jacob became angry and contended with Laban. And Jacob said to Laban, what is my transgression? What is my sin that you hotly pursue me? Though you have felt through all my goods, what have you found of your household goods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that it may decide between us two. These 20 years I have been with you, and your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn of beasts I did not bring to you, I bore the loss of it myself. You required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, by day the heat consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock. And you changed my wages 10 times. If God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, had not been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands. So he rendered judgment last night. Then Laban replied to Jacob, the daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children. And the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? So come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. Then Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar, and Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones. So they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Now Laban called it Jared Shadudath. And Jacob called it Gilead. Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me this day. Therefore it was named Gilead and Mizpah. For he said, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. You mistreat my daughters, or if you take wives beside my daughters, although no man is with us, God is witness between you and me. Laban said to Jacob, behold the heap and behold the pillar, which I set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and a pillar is a witness, and I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass by this heap and this pillar for me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his kinsmen to the meal, and they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. Early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his son and daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. It's an interesting covenant because Laban is the one who sets out the terms. And Laban is doing everything he possibly can to make it sound like Jacob's the bad guy. I found it particularly interesting that because Jacob puts up the stone and it's his men that create the heap to hold the stone in place. And then Laban turns around and says, see this pillar that I put up? It was just right then that Jacob's the one who put it up, and his men. But it tells us what it is. The reason for the disputes are laid out. Stone pillar is set up to serve as a witness to the covenant. You find that in most of the covenants. Not all of them, not all these examples mention every aspect of a covenant, but you can put them together and start seeing the various pieces. There's this idea that when there's a covenant that's going to last, you need something that witnesses to it, that it lasts as long as a covenant. It was done in the presence of God to serve both as witness and enforcer of the covenant. The terms are stipulated. The mutual benefit of peace is mentioned. Oaths are exchanged. A sacrifice to God is offered. And twice there was a meal where to show the fellowship between the two parties. Sitting down and being able to say, hey, well, at least we can eat together. In fact, as you go through the covenants, what you see is that there's a lot of symbolism that goes on and takes place. For instance, there's the fellowship is shown by giving, such as giving of gifts, like we had back when Abraham and Abimelech had brought it together. A covenant wasn't merely a promise. The oaths were given in the making of the promise. Covenants bound people together. They created a fellowship that didn't exist before, or to formalize a fellowship that had already existed. It was something that was to the mutual benefit of both parties. David and Jonathan were not related to each other. They formed a covenant to show that they were in family, basically, and to treat each other as family. And so there was exchanging of gifts. Another example of gifts, we've seen the one between Abraham and Abimelech. But take a look at Genesis 26 in verse 30. And again, notice that there, again, this is the one between Isaac and Abimelech. It says, and then he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. This was a gift that was given. Isaac offered a feast to show that these people were now bound together and that they were friendly with each other. You also see symbolisms that show the importance. Oftentimes what was given was something very personal to the person. Okay. That personal reason then showed that they were personally involved, that it was important to that person. For example, in some of the covenants it's mentioned that they give their hand. Take a look at Ezra chapter 10 and in verse 19. Ezra chapter 10 and verse 19. They pledged, and in the Hebrew it actually says they gave their hand, to put away their wives, and being guilty, they offered a ram of the flock of their offense. Here people entered into covenant, they gave their hand. That doesn't mean they cut it off. What it means is they gave their hand. They offered it. They shook on it. Take a look at Lamentations chapter 5. Lamentations chapter 5 and verse 6. We have submitted, and actually in the Hebrew it says, we gave our hand to Egypt and Assyria to get enough bread. They made a covenant with Egypt so they could get some food from Egypt. In Ezekiel chapter 17 and verse 18. Ezekiel 17 and verse 18. It says, now he despised the oath by breaking the covenant, and behold, he pledged his allegiance. That was, he gave his hand in allegiance. Yet did all these things, he shall not escape. This is where we got the idea of when you make a deal with somebody, you go up and shake their hands after we made the deal. Why do we do that? The answer is something personal. This is, say, this is something important to me. And here, I give you my hand to bind the deal. Okay. There's also another one that people find kind of confusing, giving of clothing. Like when a land transaction was done in Ruth chapter 4, verse 7. In Ruth. Chapter 4, starting with verse 7. Now this was a custom of the former times in Israel concerning the redemption and exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself," and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses today that I bought the land, bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahalon. Moreover, I will acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahalon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today." And all the people who were in the court and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built a house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrath and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, and whom Tamar bore to Judah, through the offspring which the Lord will give you by this young woman." So it's an odd way of doing a transaction. How do you settle that? How do you prove that you bought a piece of land? Well, here, I'll give you my shoe. But that was my personal shoe. Now you this saying, I approved of it. And that was the custom at that time, was to exchange a piece of clothing. When David and Jonathan made their covenant, Jonathan gave him the robe right off his back and gave him armor, his personal armor. That was to show how important it was to him that this was a covenant that was being made. Another reason to show the seriousness, remember, a lot of the covenants were enforced by death. When people broke them, there was death involved. Well, that's because they cut the sacrifices in two. That's what a covenant meant in the Old Testament, and people who made the covenant walked between them. We read the passage this morning, but again in Jeremiah 34, and in verse 18, Jeremiah 34, starting with verse 18, "I will give to man who has transgressed my covenant, who have not fulfilled the words of the covenant which they made before me, when they cut the calf in two and passed between his parts. The officials of Judah and the officials of Jerusalem, the court officers and the priests and all the people of the land who passed between the parts of the calf." There's how they made their covenant. What was it to signify? That they would walk through death to uphold that covenant. And so that's a part of it. It's a serious matter. And they had symbolism to show that. And they also had symbolism to show that the covenant was enduring, that it was going to last. One of the ways it was done was with signed documents. That's something we keep in our culture today. For example, in Jeremiah 32, and starting with verse 10, Jeremiah 32, starting with verse 10, "I signed and sealed the deed, and called in witnesses, and weighed out the silver on the scales. Then I took the deed of purchase, both the sealed copy containing the terms and conditions, and the open copy. I gave the deed of purchase to Barak, the son of Neri, the son of Mahashai, in the sight of Hananel, my uncle's son, and in the sight of the witnesses who signed the deed of the purchase before all the Jews who were sitting in the court guard. And I commanded Barak in the presence, saying, 'Thus says the Lord of hosts, of God of Israel, take these deeds, the sealed deed of purchase and this open deed, and put them in an earthenware jar, that it may last a long time.'" We do the very same thing. You take a document, you sign it in front of witnesses, the witnesses sign it to say that they attest to the fact that it was signed, and that the deed is then preserved so that somebody can look at it later. And what they did is they had one sealed so that you couldn't alter it without breaking the seal, and one was open so that you can read it without having to go back and break the seal to find out what the deed actually said. And it had all the terms and the conditions in it. But this is where we get our idea, where you go down to the deed of registry and you sign things, you record them. It's the very same thing. In Genesis 31, going back to that one, we won't read it again, but that's where Jacob and Laban, they put up a pillar. Why did they put a stone pillar up? Because the stone pillar was going to last a long time. It served a marker as a boundary between the two, but it also was a reminder of the covenant that was being made without having a written copy. Another one that's interesting is found in Leviticus 2 and verse 13. Leviticus 2 and verse 13. And it's dealing with the use of salt. Salt was a symbol. And what it symbolized is salt was used and still used today as a preservative. In fact, we had at lunch today, we have ham. They salt the ham. It's pork preserved. Because salt is a preservative. And so in Leviticus 2 and verse 13, it says, every grain offering of yours, moreover, you shall season with salt, so the salt of the covenant of your God shall not be lacking with your grain offering, and with all your offerings you shall offer salt. They put salt on the offerings to symbolize that this was being preserved, this was being kept, that this was a lasting covenant. Over in Numbers chapter 18, Numbers 18 and verse 19. All the offerings of the holy gifts which the sons of Israel offer to the Lord, I have given to you and your sons and your daughters with you as a perpetual allotment. It is an everlasting covenant of salt before the Lord to you and your descendants with you. And it was even used in other covenants. When a covenant is meant to be perpetual, when it was meant to be something that stayed around, that was continual, it was called a covenant of salt. Take a look at 2 Chronicles chapter 13. 2 Chronicles 13 and verse 5. Do you not know that the Lord God of Israel gave the rule over Israel forever to David and his son by a covenant of salt? The emphasis is the fact is that it was something that was perpetual. It was preserved. It would always be in effect. Covenants were things that were witnessed by the Lord. He was basically the chief witness. And he also was involved in saying if the terms were broken, he would get stepped in. Covenants were considered a very serious matter to the Israelites. And we should take that and understand that these are not minor, you know, hey, here's what I've done today, or where I talk about what I'm planning to do. These are not just promises that are being made. These are very serious binding contracts, treaties between people that bound them together in fellowship. And created a new relationship that did not exist before. You don't make covenants by accident. These are something extremely important that God put a lot of emphasis on. And as you notice, we went through just quite a few in the Old Testament. There are a lot of covenants mentioned. Quite a number of them. They're considered important. We need to learn about them because there's aspects of them that we need to then apply to ourselves as well, because we are people under a covenant. We are in a covenant with Christ. And we need to understand the importance of it. So right now, though, we'll take time to offer an opportunity. If there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ and enter into a covenant with Christ, one that lasts the rest of your lives and beyond. If there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than now. If there's someone who is a child of God, would like the prayers of the brethren on your behalf, perhaps you've broken that covenant, would like your prayers of your brethren on that behalf, why don't you come forward and stand and sing the song of the selecting.